Okay, welcome once again to another Throttle Up Radio show and podcast. And I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith. And I'm glad to be here. And welcome all of you out there listening on Red State Talk Radio. And also, we have a podcast. Podcast is available on iTunes as well as our website, which is throttleupradio.com on Red State Talk Radio. We are a weekend show. We're on the weekends, both Saturdays and Sundays, but both channels. To get a little bit more specific, Saturdays and Sundays we're on the Encore channel at 6 p.m. Eastern and Liberty Channel, Saturdays and Sundays, at 7 p.m. Eastern. Okay, so we've got the weekends covered for sure. Okay, we are in the midst of a special edition. This is a kind of our longest running special edition, but we're putting a lot of work into it. We think it's important, and that's why we're doing it. The name of this special edition is The Truth Algorithm. And we have been discussing it at great length over quite a few months. Is that correct? I'm asking my audio engineer here. It's, yes. I think, okay. She tells me it's the 45th episode of The Truth Algorithm. So there's lots and lots of material. And, of course, this is important in today's crazy world. Okay, so... And we're going to continue our discussion. Oh, by the way, this is particularly important. We do have the Truth Algorithm videos. These are informational videos or instructional videos, if you like that term. They both mean the same thing. There are three parts to these videos. There's part one, part two, and part three. And they are all available. They are available on our YouTube channel. And that, by the way, that's a good place to go to get it, because you can also get other stuff on, it's one of our YouTube channels. It's called Critical Decision Making and Complex Problem Solving. So that's available on YouTube channel. You can, actually, you can also plug in the term, The Truth Algorithm, when you go to the YouTube app, and it'll find it, no problem, so you can go directly to it. But, of course, if you go to our channel, you can also subscribe to the channel and other things that are typically available on a YouTube channel. You can also find the videos on our website, throttleupradio.com. All three videos are posted there as well. And, of course, you can find all of our podcasts on our website, throttleupradio.com. The Truth Algorithm. We're going to continue our discussion. Now, what is important here and what we're going to emphasize this week, I guess we could say that we're continuing to emphasize this item or this area of concern or area of interest, which is, what do we need to know about human consciousness with respect to two things? Number one, what is going on in our world and how is it affecting our ability to think? How is it affecting our mind space? And how is it affecting human consciousness? That's one thing. And number two, what, if anything, can the Truth Algorithm do to help us in this area of remaining non-contaminated with respect to our consciousness and with respect to what we have contained within our mind space? Does the Truth Algorithm help with respect to human consciousness? The answer, as far as I'm concerned, is a resounding yes, it does. Now, the truth algorithm, and keep this in mind because this is especially important today. The truth algorithm is actually a thing, okay? It exists as a thing. It's a comprehensive idea that exists in a package, if you will, okay? It is, in fact, an algorithm. But it also provides us with the ability to think about things differently. What it is, as a matter of fact, it is a formalized way in which we can systematically think critically about what is happening to us, what is happening in the world, and what we should do about it. We are not innocent bystanders here. We are not sleepwalking through history. We are active participants in our lives. We are actively participating in reality as we understand it in the here and now, as well as the future. We are actively participating in providing a viable future for mankind. We are actively part of that. The truth algorithm helps us along the way in our journey. In fact, I don't actually think we can properly navigate, we can properly go on our journey in this minefield that we find ourselves in without some kind of intellectual guidance, without some kind of mechanism by which we can find our way through this minefield of deception and distortion and lies. Okay, we are proposing here that we employ the truth algorithm. Now, the truth algorithm is, in fact, a thing, but it's also a new way of thinking about things. So what it does then, it encourages us to think about things that are not commonly discussed, are not commonly thought of, but it enables us to think about things that are, in fact, outside the box, to apply a significant amount of critical thinking to whatever is going on, to accurately recognize reality, not distorted reality, but what is actually real. A undistorted view of reality. The truth algorithm actually helps us do that. In fact, I would say that of all the things that we could do that supports this idea of critical thinking, of all the things that we could do, we could first and foremost get a good, solid working knowledge of what it means to think critically. We can do that with my book, Critical Thinking Essentials, of course, as well as other books out there that also address themselves to that and do a good job. Armed with that ability, then we can embrace and apply the truth algorithm for further examination, for further inquiry into the specifics of what is going on in our world, and whether or not, another way of saying it, is provide us with the ability to clarify that which is real. Okay, there's a lot of fake stuff going on today. We are living in a world in which propaganda prevails. There are very, very well-funded individuals and organizations that want us to believe something that is objectively not true, but they nevertheless want us to believe that it is true, and this furthers their agenda. Okay. That, of course, begs the question, what is their agenda? The agenda could very well be one world government, a world takeover. It goes by a number of names. Their agenda is not necessarily our agenda. Their agenda is almost certainly self-serving, and it doesn't support what the average citizen like you and I want to have available to us and to be able to achieve. Okay, obviously, freedom or liberty is something that is under attack as we speak, as well as other things. Okay, so what is it about the truth algorithm that we need to understand? We need to understand the truth algorithm from a number of perspectives, and one of them is the higher order reasoning perspective. This higher order reasoning perspective is that we need something to provide us with some level of support, or provide us with the ability to maintain a healthy consciousness, to support our ability to think clearly. There's a raging battle here for our mind space. Our mind space deals with our ability to think, what we have contained within our mind space, which then addresses itself to what we call, or what is typically called, human consciousness. Okay, there are nefarious forces afoot that want to contaminate our consciousness with things that are objectively untrue. They are not true, they are lies, but they are masquerading as the truth. Okay, we have to be aware of that, and we have to arm ourselves with some protective clothing. We don't go out there completely naked. We go out there with some protective clothing. It's like walking out into the desert at high noon. Okay, we need some protection. We need some eye protection. We need some body protection, as well as other things. Okay, the truth algorithm then is our protection. That's our shield of protection against ubiquitous propaganda. Ubiquitous propaganda is in fact going to win. They will win the day unless we do something destroys it, unless we take action. Now you could say, okay, what else is there out there besides the truth algorithm? And I would say that there's, okay, you know, in a general sense, I would say that there's critical thinking for sure, but critical thinking and the truth algorithm go hand in glove. As a matter of fact, the truth algorithm is just a offshoot of or a major branch of critical thinking. Okay, so it is a part of this whole complex construct that we call critical thinking. Okay. And so human consciousness is at play here, and we need to be aware of the fact that we have to clean out our mind space. If it is in fact contaminated, we have to clean it out. And we use the truth algorithm to help us clean out our contaminated mind space if it is in fact contaminated. Now, as I speak, there has been major attempts to convince us of things that may not very well be true. And I'll leave you with this thought before we go into some formal discussions of the truth algorithm. I'll leave you this thought. Is it possible to actually falsify a video that is being depicted as something that actually happened? Is it possible to falsify a video or a video material? If the answer is yes, it is in fact possible to falsify a video, then should we then be armed with a healthy level of skepticism with respect to anything that we see from video material or video material that we did not produce ourselves? Are we going to accept it on face value, or are we not going to accept it on face value? Okay. We are then now going to prepare ourselves. We're going to listen to a section of the Truth Algorithm Instructional Video Part 2. This section here that we have carved out for our listening audience on this show right now. This section, again, is from the Truth Algorithm Part 2. And it deals with this whole idea of perception and comprehension and human consciousness. And I think it is so profoundly important today that we understand this. This is a major part of the truth algorithm, by the way. All right? It's not just a mechanical device. It's a new way of thinking, a new way of examining reality. It's a new way by which we can lead productive lives. So in this section here, we're going to listen to how many minutes of that is it? It's a 15 minutes. All right. So this is a 15-minute segment of the beginning of the Truth Algorithm Part 2. I think it is very well worth having on this show to explain what we are trying to address with respect to all of this discussion concerning the truth algorithm. All right, so here goes. Okay, now, this part two of the truth algorithm informational video or instructional video, if you like that term, they both apply. We are going to spend a bit of time trying to understand what is it about reality that we need to understand and utilize such that we can make sense out of what is happening in our lives, what is happening in the world, so that we can respond effectively and appropriately and not make mistakes in our response or lack of response to what is actually going on. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about definitions and clarification of ideas and to get to the bottom of what we mean by certain words and phrases going forward to set the stage here, to set the stage so that we can properly deal with this issue of how to find the truth in a hostile world. First and foremost, we have to understand what is reality. Reality represents that which is real. It actually exists and is verifiably true. Clarification of the environment in which one resides, as well as the situation that has been encountered, is key to knowledge and comprehension of that which is real. We have to look at our environment, we have to look at our situation, as well as looking at the specifics that we are trying to address ourselves to. One of the keys in going forward is to recognize that we are, in fact, living in a world in which uncertainty prevails. There is a lot of uncertainty out there for various reasons, not least of which is censorship. Okay, so uncertainty is real. It is part of our reality, a part of our existence, and we have to address ourselves to that fact, to that reality. We have to address ourselves to conditions in which uncertainty prevails in order for us to make sense out of the world. The truth algorithm, here is a good definition. The truth algorithm works hand in glove with critical thinking to enable one to employ algorithmic reasoning in order to reliably distinguish between that which is the truth and that which is not true. The truth algorithm, what is it? That which is true relates to that which is also true. In other words, what I'm saying is that the truth is not an isolated phenomena. The truth actually exists within a model of reality in which things that are also true support the objective truth that we have identified. The truth resides within a quantum field of reality in which connections and networks reside. We talked about this before in the first video, and so we're repeating ourselves because it's important for us to understand. What is true is that which resides within the model of reality that is actual, objectively real, and capable of manifesting beneficial results. The truth algorithm, how does it work? That which is true connects with other aspects of reality that are likewise true, creating a quantum field of reality from which knowledge and wisdom emerge. If what we know is true, then it allows for productive activities to occur, benefiting ourselves and others. The truth algorithm. Now, we occupy an environment that is adverse as well as being hostile to reason. As we speak, truth is being suppressed. Importantly, hostile agents have entered our mind space, armed with cognitive mechanisms designed to increase the plausibility of a proposition or assertion that is objectively untrue, but masquerades as the truth. Here we have a graphical depiction of what a quantum field looks like. This is part of the reality that we are trying to address ourselves to. Also, and we're just going to touch on this because this is a little bit unusual, perhaps even outside the box. Nevertheless, we are going to mention that the truth algorithm, and in particular Bayes' theorem, actually does look at proportionality. It is a mathematical construct that recognizes the importance of things that are proportional to one another. So in the model of reality that we are creating here, keep this in mind, that we are actually looking at things that are proportional. We can also say we are looking at things that are symmetrical. Nevertheless, various ratios that exists within the realm of reality often are equal. So we could also call it the equalization of ratios or proportions. What are we dealing with? We are dealing with deception. First and foremost, we have to understand that, and we have to be very, very clear. One of the values of doing this video, and one of the values of watching this video, is we use this to clear up any confusion about what we mean and what we are all about. Clarification is crucial here. We have to understand that. We have to be very, very careful in our ability to clarify the actual. And this is what we're doing. And here we are clarifying what exactly is happening to us with respect to deception. Deception is alive and well. Deception is all around us. Deception has to be recognized for what it is. Deception, I will read this, deception is presented to an unsuspecting consumer of information, which could be us, hopefully it's not, but it could be, and immediately accepted as the truth. This is extremely important that we understand that deception is intended to deceive us, because whoever is perpetrating the deception wants us to buy into this deception immediately without examination. And we are not going to do that. In order for the lie, that is deception, to work, it must be invited into one's consciousness and accepted and processed as that which is true. This, in turn, will produce contamination of human consciousness. The end result of deception is to contaminate human consciousness, which things that are masquerading as the truth, but in fact are not true. Therefore, human consciousness can either embrace the clarification of reality or become so contaminated that it does not know what exactly is real. It does not know what precisely is the truth. Okay, that's what we are dealing with, and we are trying to address ourselves to human consciousness and prevent it from becoming contaminated. Human consciousness, just as a review, deals with that which is known or knowledge, acquiring knowledge, also engaging in purposeful activities, achieving success, and ultimately gaining wisdom. This is why humans are conscious, and that's why we have consciousness. Ultimately, to gain wisdom. Okay, now we're going to be delving into this whole area of algorithmic reasoning. What is the truth algorithm, and why do we need it, and how we can use it? We touched on this in the first video, the introduction video. We're going to delve into this a little bit more in depth than the first one. So just be prepared for that. The truth algorithm does, in fact, address itself to certain things that we need to be aware of. Number one, critical thinking. That's crucial. The other one is skepticism. We are going to be skeptical about everything out there. Healthy skepticism is, in fact, the order of the day. And along with that, we are going to engage in clarification. We are going to clarify to the greatest possible extent. We are going to clarify what exactly is going on, and what exactly do we mean by certain things. We will also involve ourselves with correlation between events and circumstances. Absolutely, this correlation is key. Causal inference is, in fact, important as well. And conditional probabilities, we are going to be dealing with that in a very substantial way. Conditional probabilities are going to be our bread and butter going forward. Okay, so that completes our discussion with respect to the truth algorithm that we have previously recorded as the truth algorithm instructional video part two. And that lead in to the video is extremely important, and we're going to, and that's why we played it today, and we're going to play it again over the course of the next 6 months or so, because it is so incredibly important that we develop that mindset, and we clean out any contamination that we have with respect to our mind space, things that are contaminating our consciousness, and we are then better equipped to employ the truth algorithm. We have one more audio clip to play, and this relates to this whole thing that we're talking about, this whole idea of propaganda and arming ourselves against that which is not true, arming ourselves against the big lie. And this is another great piece by the Academy of Ideas. This is entitled, "Is the Mainstream Media a Threat to Freedom and Sanity?" Let's go ahead and listen to this great piece by the Academy of Ideas.
I rejoice that horses and steers have to be broken before they can be made the slaves of men, and that men themselves have some wild oats still left to sow before they become submissive members of society. If this claim of Henry David Thoreau's is true, that we must be broken before we become enslaved and submissive, then we are a broken population. For most of us are submissive to a fault. We do what we are told, no matter how absurd, idiotic, or immoral, so long as the command comes from a politician, bureaucrat, or scientist. In exchange for protection from relatively trivial threats, we have given away our freedom and are permitting the rise of a truly deadly threat, totalitarianism. But can the tides be turned? In this video, we are going to make the case that the internet, smartphones, and social media are technologies that may prove very unfavorable to those who wish to place us in the chains of a technocratic totalitarianism. It is said that politics is downstream from culture, that culture, in other words, determines the type of rule that emerges in a society. But one could also say that culture is downstream from technology. Technological innovations, by creating new possibilities for how we interact with the world, change culture. Of all the technological revolutions that engender cultural change, changes in communication technologies are among the most impactful, for these technologies sculpt the flow of information, and information is power. Information directs our focus and so helps shape our perception of reality. Information demonstrates what is possible and so influences how we act. And in the political realm, information legitimizes or delegitimizes a ruling class structure. Change the communication technology and you change the flow of information. Change the flow of information and you change a culture. Change a culture and you change the political status quo. A cursory glance at two communication technology revolutions that preceded the rise of the internet, the invention of Gutenberg's movable type printing press in the mid-15th century, and the rise of the mass media of radio and television in the 20th century, reveals the dramatic social change that comes in their wake. Socially, the typographic extension of man, wrote Marshall McLuhan, brought in nationalism, industrialism, mass markets, and universal literacy and education. The printing press led to an explosion in the publishing of books. It is estimated that only 12,000 books were copied by all the scribes in Europe in the 50 years prior to this invention, while in the 50 years following it, approximately 12 million books were produced. By reducing the cost of publishing a book, information flowed into more houses and ideas expanded the minds of a greater number of people, and with profound political implications. The increase in the number of Bibles was an important factor in the Reformation, and the pamphlet movement was a driving force of the French and American revolutions. As a result of Gutenberg's invention, writes Andrei Miroshnichenko, monarchs were beheaded, world maps were redrawn, modern society and modern economics were born. The next major communication revolution was the invention of the electric telegraph and the radio, telephone, and television, which followed soon after. These technologies diminished the need for a transportation network of rail, road, and sea to spread information and so shrunk the globe. The ability to beam information into every home in a nation simultaneously gave rise to the paradigm of the mass media that defined the 20th century. In 1947, the Commission of Freedom of the Press gave a prescient description of the power unleashed by the informational flows of this new media paradigm. The modern press itself is a new phenomenon. Its typical unit is the great agency of mass communication. Those agencies facilitate thought and discussion. They can stifle it. They can advance the progress of civilization, or they can thwart it. They can debase and vulgarize mankind. They can endanger the peace of the world. They can play up or down the news and its significance, foster and feed emotions, create complacent fictions and blind spots, misuse the great words, and uphold empty slogans. The mass media of radio and television structures a top-down informational flow. The relative few who own and operate the broadcasting infrastructure, in cooperation with the wealthy and powerful individuals, corporations, and institutions who influence the institutions of mass media, filter, manipulate, and package the content in ways that serve their interests. The mass media proclaim themselves a supplier, but it really serves as a valve, which opens for money or when given permission to by the authorities, wrote Miroshnichenko. Mass media made possible a never-before-seen conformity in worldviews and proved an excellent paradigm for the furtherance of ideologies that favored top-down, centralized control. For those who determine what information flows through the mass media have the power to direct the attention of the masses toward certain issues and events and away from others, or as Michael Parenti explains. If the press cannot mold our every opinion, it can frame the perceptual reality around which our opinions take shape. Here may lie the most important effect of the news media. They set the issue agenda for the rest of us, choosing what to emphasize and what to ignore or suppress, in effect, organizing much of our political world for us. The media may not always be able to tell us what to think, but they are strikingly successful in telling us what to think about. In a more cynical manner, one could say that mass media grants the few who control it the sort of power depicted in George Orwell's novel 1984. Power is in tearing human minds to pieces, in putting them together again in new shapes of your own choosing. The Nazis made use of the mass media to induce their population into accepting totalitarian rule, for as the Nazi propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels stated, "Our way of taking power and using it would have been inconceivable without the radio." Gordon Alport and Hadley Cantrell, in their 1935 book, The Psychology of Radio, echoed the sentiment behind Goebbels' claim, writing, "Radio is an altogether novel medium of communication, preeminent as a means of social control and epochal in its influence upon the mental horizons of men. A unidirectional, limited, and filtered flow of information, all in the control of a select few and served up to the gullible masses, creates a situation analogous to Plato's allegory of the cave. In this allegory, prisoners are chained in a cave and forced to watch the dancing of shadows on walls. Not knowing any better, the prisoners mistake the shadows for reality, and as Richard Weaver writes in Ideas Have Consequences, the mass media is a translation into actuality of Plato's celebrated figure of the cave. The defect of the prisoners is that they cannot perceive the truth. The wall before them, on which the shadows play, is the screen on which press, motion picture, and radio project their account of life. And herein lies the power of the internet revolution. It is a means for the masses to escape from the cave of manipulated shadows. For each time one of us identifies corruption by institutional authorities, sees through a lie, or identifies an act of propaganda, once we notice, in other words, that what is thought to be a truth is but the manipulation of a shadow, we can reveal our discovery to an audience of potentially millions. The internet revolution is ending the monopoly the mass media has on the flow of information, and so if the printing press led to an emancipation of readership, then as Miroshnichenko writes, what we are experiencing now is the emancipation of authorship. Personal computers as well as mobile devices have given all individuals the unlimited right to share their thoughts with others, whatever their reason. Will the emancipation of authorship be as transformative as the communication revolutions that preceded it? Time will tell, but to quote Miroshnichenko once again, if historical analogies are accurate, then we should expect comparable cataclysms following the rise of the internet. The powers of the old authorities have always collapsed along with their loss of sacral control over information. As a result, the social, political, and economic status quo falls apart. With every release of content, society sheds its old form, like a snake sheds its skin. The informational flows made possible by the internet should not be viewed as solely destructive and delegitimizing in their effects. Rather, in a more constructive manner, they are revealing alternative possibilities for how society can operate and how individuals can live their lives, be it alternatives to the inflationary monetary system of fiat currency, to the government control of education and healthcare, or to the political structure of society at large. Ideas that would never have been permitted in the controlled paradigm of the mass media are being spread by the emancipation of authorship. This new media paradigm is unleashing the creative destruction needed to keep society from descending into the rot of stagnation. But as this free flow of information is threatening to the parasitic lifestyle of many who occupy positions of power, we should expect increased calls for censorship in the attempt to force us back into the cave of deceptions. This censorship will be justified as needed to limit hate speech and to correct misinformation. But these excuses are merely the attractive packaging being used to hide what is a socially destructive act, the stifling of free speech in the attempt to protect powerful interests. The emancipation of authorship threatens the legitimacy of the oligarchical class of politicians, bureaucrats, and crony capitalists, and their ability to pull off their machinations behind the protective veil of the manipulated mass media. The gods and men who have kept their prestige for long have never tolerated discussion. For the crowd to admire, it must be kept at a distance. This is not the first time attempts have been made to limit the informational flows that emerge from new communication technologies. Following the invention of the printing press, the ruling class of Europe implemented harsh censorship laws. One example was the English Licensing Order of 1643, which mandated the arrest of anyone who printed books critical of the government. But the power of the printing press proved too strong. Its effects could not be contained by mandates of a ruling class grasping for power. And as Marshall McLuhan wrote, "Once a new technology comes into a society, it cannot cease to permeate that society until every institution is saturated." But history merely rhymes. It does not repeat. And it is possible that if we are too passive and do not take a hard stance against attempts to stifle free speech, then this technological revolution will be one that differs from those of the past. Those in power will learn to use this new technological paradigm to their advantage, and instead of liberating us, these technologies will be the tool that descends us into the hell of a technocratic global totalitarianism. "Public opinion," wrote Alexander Solzhenitsyn, "I don't know how sociologists define it, but it seems obvious to me that it can only consist of interacting individual opinions, freely expressed and independent of government or party opinion. So long as there is no independent public opinion in our country, there is no guarantee that the extermination of millions and millions for no good reason will not happen again, that it will not begin any night, perhaps this very night."
Okay, so another great piece by the Academy of Ideas about media and about communication and stuff like that. Now, keep in mind, the central point that we are trying to make here is what is it that we believe? What is human consciousness? What is contained within our individual consciousness? And what is contained within humanity's consciousness? First and foremost, we have to consider whether or not we are passive or we are active members of the human condition. Are we active or will we just stand by passively and let those who wish to control us gain control over us? Or are we going to resist that attempt and declare that, no, we are not going to passively allow others to gain control. They cannot control us unless they control our minds. And this is a very, very important thing to understand. This is one of the things that we learned when we were going through prisoner of war training in the military. I went through a prisoner of war training. It was a very realistic, a very high stress and physically demanding period of training that we all had to go through to be a combat aviator. The first order of business is they wanted to break us, and they wanted to control our minds. They wanted to control the way we thought, the way we felt. That's what is going on today on a massive scale. That is what is going on today on a global scale, a very serious attempt to control our consciousness and contaminate it with information, with stuff that is actually not true. So the first order of business before we apply the truth algorithm to a specific case, to a specific event or series of events, is to make sure that our mind space is not contaminated with stuff that will prevent the truth algorithm from being able to function properly. It's kind of like the fuel. Make sure that we have a fuel filter on our cognitive engine, which we call the truth algorithm. Do we have it properly filtered? In the airplanes I flew, we all always had high-quality fuel filters. So keep that in mind. Do we have a fuel filter, or do we have a filter in place? Okay, another Throttle Up Radio show is coming to completion. Thank you for listening, and we will see you all next week.